My name is Roger Overall. I'm a photographer, podcaster, writer, and filmmaker based in Ireland. I tell stories. Some of my favourite stories revolve around food. Today, we're going to hear lots of stories about mushrooms. I'm sitting in Mark Cribbins's van, trundling along some back roads in County Cork. Mark and his wife Lucy run Ballyhoura Mountain Mushrooms, and today he's taking me on a foraging trip. We're heading for some woods. When we get there, Mark eases into the role of host and guide, talking freely about the mushrooms we find. I soon learn that mushrooms have uses beyond those of nutrition and poison we usually associate with them. He shows me an oblong, thick mushroom, light in colour, hard and rubbery to the touch. The birch polypore.
Birch polypores traditionally were used for basically people would consume them for intestinal parasites. It would worms, etc. But that's what people would take them. They are also, when they're dried as well, they go rock hard. And this older one might be a better specimen. And people used to use them as well for starting like a tinderbox for basically starting fires because it goes very hard. And the other very interesting fact about it, and it was used extensively up to about the turn of the century, it was used for honing the blades of knives. When this goes dry, if you take it home and put it home or later on in the year, it goes very, very hard, and you basically would just use it as a wet sharpening blade, but it's a mushroom and it would put the buff on knives, and it would have been used extensively for that.
The birch polypore is a heavy, weighty, dense mushroom, but it's certainly not the largest. Mushrooms can grow huge. In fact, Mark tells me about the largest living organism ever found, a fungus in Yosemite Park in the US.
They took DNA profiles of the mushroom and they typed it. It's all the same cell. And it's basically, if you take mushrooms, they typically, many cases, they spread out in a circular pattern, the sort of the fairy ring. So they advance, they advance, they advance, they advance, they advance, they advance. So they spread out from the centre outwards, and this one probably had spread out 80, 90 miles. So how many life cycles and that has been involved, I have no idea, but it's, as far as I know, I think it's classified as the largest living organism. And probably the one of the oldest living organisms as well.
Giant, ancient organisms, fairy rings. It all sounds like something from a children's book. Unsurprisingly, there is a connection.
Beatrix Potter, I suppose most people would know her from the Peter Rabbit book series. But originally she was a mycologist, basically someone who studied mushrooms. And she would have published field identification guides drawing on her considerable artistic skills, drawing very detailed diagrams, pictures, structure and naming of mushrooms. She would have been published in a couple of scientific journals in the UK. But I suppose at the time women were seen as somewhat outside the scientific circles. So she retired to write children's literature. But her love of mushrooms, is you can still see it in all the Bear Rabbit stories. The rabbits hiding out under Fly of Garrick, the traditional sort of children's fairy tale mushroom, which is the red mushroom with the little white spots. And as far as I know, I think her mushroom things are available to see in the National Trust house that she has. They have for Beatrix Potter.
One of our most beloved fictional Christmas characters may have a link to mushrooms too. Magic mushrooms, in particular. The method of ingestion of these mushrooms is quite remarkable.
You get mushrooms like Fly of Garrick, which is the, as I said, the sort of the standard children's fairy tale book. That's the mushroom with the red with the white spots. You do get that in Ireland, but it does require a fair degree of preparation. can be poisonous, so people can get poisoned eating it in the search of getting high. This is the one that the Sami people in Finland drink, the frozen reindeer urine. It's apparent it's not poisonous to, it doesn't seem to have any ill effects or poisonous effects on the deer, or sorry, on the reindeer that the Sami, the Lapps, mind. And what the Sami have discovered, and I'd like to know who was the first man to discover it, is that if you consume the frozen urine, you get the trip without the adverse abdominal cramping and the whole lot. And it can be taken repeatedly and repeatedly. Its metabolite is not broken down in the body. So,
when you say repeatedly and repeatedly, you mean it goes in, it's not broken down, it comes out again.
You can retake it again, get high and redo the trip. But that's basically where they, if you were to read people, that they would say the story of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer came from. As you can imagine, flying reindeers after consuming some fly agaric is probably not the strangest thing that you've ever heard of. And if you think of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, his nose looks like a fly agaric.
While some mushrooms can alter the state of your mind, others can alter the state of your body, from alive to dead.
Depending on the mushroom, it might just go from a severe sort of abdominal cramps, unwell. Take some of the more severe mushrooms. Unfortunately, it can prove fatal, and there's not much. There's not as if it's an antidote can be done. You take the amanitas, which are the destroying angel and the death cap. You basically suffer loss of kidney and liver function, and you'll typically die about 7 days time. And the funny thing is that you often hear referred to is that people said they tasted good. People expect a mushroom that are poisonous will taste bad, and they'll typically say they tasted good. And in many cases, people will recover for 2 or 3 days at the start, and that's it. Then, unfortunately, I suppose if you were to get a liver and kidney transplant, they do use multiple blood transfusions to try and basically counteract some of them. But unfortunately, depending on the dose, if you eat a death cap, it does what it says on the tin, you know.
And then, almost as if it had heard its name mentioned, the death cap appeared. A bulbous, glistening, menacing fungus.
Now, Roger, my guess is this is the death cap. Perhaps. I'll have to go back and check, but you see here, he's come out of sort of an egg-like sac. See it round here? Comes out of a little egg-like sac. That's typically very indicative of the class of family that they come from. I'd say there's very high probability that's a death cap, and you certainly wouldn't want to touch it. You can actually absorb some of the toxins through your skin. So typically what I'd say to anybody, if they're picking mushrooms and they're unsure about a mushroom, they're bringing it back to wrap it in newspaper to separate it from the rest of your mushrooms that you've picked in your basket. It's very easy, and take it home and check the book. But to me now, it looks like a death cap.
Of course, not all mushrooms are there to kill you. They are, after all, one of nature's great culinary delights.
The Holy Grail is, you've probably, I suppose like Catholicism, you've three forms of it. You'd have the cep, which is in Italian is the porcini, in French the cep, in English to call it the penny bun. It's the big wild mushroom. It has sulfury, meaty, umami flavours. It's probably the best. The other ones that people in sort of from a culinary point of view, you have the morel, which typically it's a spring mushroom, and it comes out about April, start of May. I've been lucky enough to find a few bits and pieces of them over the years. They're rare. Whether they're rare or you just can't find them, I'm not sure. The other one then that chefs love is a mushroom called the Horn of Plenty, and that's a black mushroom. And as you can imagine, trying to find a black mushroom doesn't make for easy mushroom hunting.
The culinary applications of mushrooms go beyond slicing and dicing. Oiled and powdered, they have their uses too.
Dried porcini mushroom, it's just basically like a natural flavour enhancer. It enhances everything. It gives things a very umami flavour, that sort of savouriness. So you don't necessarily have to eat them fresh. In some cases, drying them and sort of processing them a bit more actually makes them more flavourful. And it just allows chefs, it's another armory. You know, they're creating a broth or a bouillon or something like that, and they're just putting, you know, these are sort of the culinary arts of molecular gastronomy. That's sort of what you're going back to. It's high source of glutamic acid. What does glutamic acid work with? It increases the umami flavour profile of meats and things like that. So that's why it works. The seps as well, you can also make an oil with them, and you basically infuse them with an oil like extra virgin olive oil, or maybe some rapeseed oil if you wanted to do it with that. And the oil, you do a hot infusion of the oil, and the oil will take on the sep flavour. And we sell that, and people use it in things like risottos, just to give that sort of wild flavour mushroom, just as an alternative to truffle oil. And what some people do, and what they use it in, is they swear by putting it on eggs, that it works really, really well with eggs.
Our time together foraging is up. We cast our eye over the basket and its contents. Mark reels off a series of mystical, magical names.
We've picked hedgehogs, we've picked the mapillotti, we have Girolle chanterelles, we have autumn chanterelles, we have golden chanterelles, we've grey oyster, we've amethyst deceiver, and we've some deceivers, so... And a mixed bag, and plenty of tasty mushrooms, and plenty of happy customers tomorrow in Mahon Point.
Mushroom foragers are tremendously secretive about their patches. I'd like to tell you where Mark took me, but I can't. I simply can't remember.
Let's get the men in black machine now, Roger, and just...